Isaac Luria is program director at Nathan Cummings Foundation, supporting multi-faith and Jewish social justice efforts. And he's here to continue the conversation on the surge in anti-Semitism. Isaac, thanks for being with us on State of Belief.
Brilliant to be here. Thank you, Paul.
I think every one of my cousins, relatives, friends, neighbors who is Jewish is experiencing this differently. And I'm just wondering if you can start by talking personally about how you're feeling.
Yeah. Thank you, Paul. And I appreciate that opening. I was thinking about this conversation and, you know, every time I talk about anti-Semitism with folks, I always want to have a historical perspective and acknowledge the incredible pain that has happened to Jews over the course of millennia due to anti-Semitism. The murders, the pogroms, the forced leaving from places we had lived for generations, the betrayal of communities that we had lived in, and the ways in which that oppression over generations has affected us and who we are and who we are allowed to be today. That trauma lives in our bones. It is present every day. Like many other communities who have had trauma throughout generations. And today I feel it because I am experiencing the not just a surge in anti-Semitic incidents, but the normalization of ideas of anti-Semitism that are extremely dangerous, not only to Jews, but to the possibility of a multiracial, democratic society here in the United States. So yeah. Thank you for that opening. And I appreciate being here, being able to talk with you and your listeners about it.
Well, I think what you said is, you know, the normalization, almost the permission granted to give, you know, have this be a conversation that seems to lack a certain sensitivity, lack a certain awareness of just what you're talking about, just why this is landing in a certain way. And so I just really, I think it's so important for people to hear what you just said, is that this is centuries of experiencing this. People in living memory, and many of them still living, experiencing the Holocaust, which is not up for debate. But in some circles, there is there are people who would rather erase it. And so this is, you know, this is something that I think people have to realize is the way this is landing for their Jewish neighbors. And I'm just wondering if, you know, I don't want to put you on the spot, but like for you, I mean, you're married to a rabbi, you have children, you're also just my experience of you as a person, as a colleague, as a friend, is that you're a family man. And and that, you know, I mean, in the best sense of the word, you know, yeah. And I think that there's one thing for, you know, for people to walk around as themselves, but then as family people, you carry around a whole nother set of concerns. And so, you know, I don't want to talk about anything that you don't want to talk about, but I do think that's really also important. This is not just about individuals. It's about families and family communities.
Yes. And it's about, so clearly because I am who I am and my kids listen to the radio with me in the car, like we end up having conversations about anti-Semitism and what it will be like for them as Jewish people here in America. You know, they're social justice kids. You know, they know that they want to fight racism. They support Black Lives Matter. They support LGBTQ rights. To see anti-Semitism as a part of that feels like natural to them, right? Mm. They're like, the folks who don't like me because I'm gay also don't like Jews. The folks who don't support Black Lives Matter are also the folks, you know, out here with white nationalist banners saying that Jews shall not replace us. So there's a way in which they have a natural understanding of these things intersecting, which I wish I could claim some kind of credit for that as a dad doing political education in the house. But honestly, it's what's been happening in the world that is showing us this anew. Let me
stop you for a second and give you some credit, because you're helping them make connections that I think are important for our listeners to also make. That this is, that there is a through line here. This is not like, and it is a very specific scourge. Anti-Semitism is its own thing, and so it doesn't just get blended with everything else. However, it has a through line. I would say white Christian nationalism is its current like phrasing. But it is a through line that affects many communities, and it has specific implications for the Jewish community. So your kids making that connection is partly due to, the great work you do in the world as someone who has been a really important movement leader. I don't want you to get away with saying this has nothing to do with you, because both you and your wife are extraordinary leaders.
You're very kind to say it. And I think we're in this together, Paul. And I think this is, you as a Christian leader and your work, lifting this up today and all days is really important, because as Jews, we know that we're not going to be able to solve anti-Semitism on our own. I think the thing that I want to bring to your listeners today is to continue to deepen that understanding of anti-Semitism fitting into a set of oppressions that affect all marginalized people, and in fact are not just about quote-unquote hatred of Jewish people. It's not like I'm going to be out there with my, kippah on my head and somebody's going to say something nasty to me on the subway. Like, while that's terrible, what I'm really thinking about is the way that this affects what's possible in our politics in America, what's possible in our democracy. We will be a majority-minority country in a voting public very soon. It's already happened in our high schools, right? That reality is what threatens white nationalists and white Christian nationalists. They are scared of America changing. And change is forever. It's constant. It's an always thing. Sorry for the spiritual message, but it's a true thing. And so we have a kind of adaptation that's happening in America right now. And the use of anti-Semitism as a political tool to prevent the emergence of multiracial democracy in America is the important message that I feel like is sort of under everything. Anti-Semitism was used in Nazi Germany, for example, not just because Nazis didn't like Jews, but because it was a way of mobilizing hatred at a national scale. It was a very effective way of doing it. The same thing can happen in other contexts. The Soviet Union used it as well as a way of mobilizing its supporters. So we have to be aware of the ways that anti-Semitism is not just how I am affected by hatred in my community, but also about what it is, the story that it's trying to articulate about a conspiratorial attack on white people. And that Jews are a part of that, black and brown people together with Jews doing that. And this is a classic thing that happened in the civil rights era, similar accusations levied at the civil rights movement, Jews controlling black people or trying to free back black people from Jim Crow. And of course, that's like a ridiculous set of ideas, because black people obviously are like advocating for their own lives or in charge of their own destinies, right? But Jews did ally there. And I think we should be proud of that. I think we should be proud of what the Jewish people are doing here in America also in holding up a light to giving a vision for a multiracial America. We actually are a multiracial community too. There are brown people in our community from Arab countries, Mizrahi Jews. There are black Jews as well as white Jews. And that diversity is a strength. So
I think that's like everything you said, just like underscore everything you said, is just really, really important. And the historical ways that anti-Semitism has been used by, I would say, authoritarian governments trying to rally a base of resentment and often to obfuscate. Is that the word? Obfuscate? Am I just making up a word? To like, you know, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Exactly.
Instead, they're over there. Look at them right there. As right. I think really, really important. My guest is Isaac Luria, program director at the Nathan Cummings Foundation. One difficult conversation that I want to see if you want to engage is there has been what seems to me an over. I'm just going to say this, and I'm not sure if I really what I really think about it, but
let's go.
A lot of attention paid to Kanye West,
right.
Irving, and other and black leaders who have you know they've definitely been doing terrible anti-Semitic things. But in some ways, that has reinforced a kind of conflict. And again, I think it goes back to this wider framework that you just articulated. Oh, let's make this about black and Jews instead of actually a broader story about a nation. And so I just am curious how you, a racial analysis, and in future shows, Rabbi Sandra Lawson and other black Jews are going to come on and talk to us about that. So I think, this is just the beginning of that conversation. But I do want to, name it because there's been, an unease in some of the ways this has been framed.
Yes, I think that's a really important point and one that when you really step back, you can see that it has been easier in the media and in the public to attack black people over their anti-Semitic statements than it has been to hold white leaders to account. With political power, with the ability to change policies in this country, Kanye West, we can say a lot about him, but he is he's a jokester. Like, he's not in political power. He has some narrative power in some communities, but it's not serious. Donald Trump hosted a white nationalist who has openly anti-Semitic beliefs and denies the existence of the Holocaust at his home. The man's running for president, has a potential to win. He was a former president of the United States. These are different things. And I think the reason that this is possible is because these are black folks and not white people in power. And I'm going to call out part of my community because I think it's important to acknowledge that it has been easier for many white Jewish institutions to levy accusations against the black community around anti-Semitism than to hold Republican politicians to account. And I think part of that is about power, right? Like, who has power? What can you say in public and what cannot say in public? And part of that, I think, has to do with a misunderstanding of how important having a racial analysis in the way we confront anti-Semitism really is. And I hope that white Jewish institutions, sort of the alphabet soup that shows up in D.C., ADL, AGC, others, we'll continue to, get smarter about this because there is a kind of alienation of our allies, black, brown, other folks, and including Jews of color in our community that happens when we do that. And we can be better on this. We can do better.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think long-term strategy and just the well-being of our country requires it. And also to acknowledge that there has been an extraordinary response from the black community condemning all of these things and these actions.
Exactly.
And so, you're almost sort of like, okay, so let's give them all the folks who have been stepping up from all sides, condemning all of this.
Yeah.
Let me, as we kind of close out, I know that you're like super smart about, kind of social media, Twitter. I don't know if you're like as active on Twitter, but you were like, this is part of your life. There was part of your life. I'm just curious, like, let's take this online for a second and see, like, how are you seeing kind of the Elon Musk conversation but more broadly, it's not just about Twitter. It's like, how things show up online and how that can lead to actual violence offline. I mean, this is not unrelated.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to go back and cite all the studies, but that show us how social media, in particular Twitter, have accelerated trends of radicalization. But they do that. And those trends of radicalization are happening all over, but particularly in white nationalist communities, where an echo chamber is very important, especially because a lot of these views are considered noxious by larger society. Elon Musk's sort of wandering into a conversation about how media might make authoritarian politics more palatable and making some really ridiculous, you know, moves to like just open up the floodgates in the name of free speech. It's not substantial and it's quite dangerous. And I think, you know, there's sort of a tech bro thing about libertarian, let's all let everybody yell at each other sort of thing. And that'll be better for democracy. But given the way that power is established in these things and the possibility of violence afterwards, you actually have to step into this with more care. And anybody who's run one of these big, I mean, I was a moderator for a long time of a Facebook forum, and like, you actually have to curate that. You have to moderate that. You have to be like, hey, like, crazy cat person in the middle of Oklahoma, like you saying over and over again that somebody is like a traitor to America is like, that's not speech. That's somebody yelling in the middle of a public space. And we have limits about that, right? We acknowledge limits about that already in our politics and how we understand open space. So it's been bad to watch this and an unleashing that. Really, maybe in a way there's a silver lining, Paul, that seeing it all out in the open will wake people up to the fact that the kind of hatred that's present here is like not just like crazy people, right? Like it represents like maybe 25% of the American public. But that's a scary reality to
that's millions and millions of people. Yeah, yes. I mean, yeah. I
what do you
I
think?
Always cite that. Well, no, I just, you know, having spent a lot of my life working on religion and tech and really seeing, you know, I mean, if you think about the person who murdered the people at Tree of Life Synagogue, I mean, he was online right before he did it and told people he was going to do it online.
Yes.
And in a forum that supported this kind of violence. And so this is,
and
you
the
know,
Pulse nightclub shooting, same thing,
all of it. And you know, it's really,
and then the guy tries to broadcast it online. He's like showing it out off, showing I mean, off on Facebook about it. I mean, come on.
Yeah. So, I the last question, I mean, how can people show up right now? I would say both, you know, both Jews and non-Jews in order to really, you know, effectively confront anti-Semitism.
Hmm. I think there's many ways to do it. I think there are, if you're the kind of person that has relationship with Jews that is meaningful to you and you can feel comfortable reaching out and saying, how are you doing? That's always great. Different Jews have different ways that they like to be supported, just like all people, right? So sort of being a listening ear, showing up for them personally is helpful. I think all of us have different, or many of us have different relationships with institutions in our lives, whether it's church or a political organization or, you know, a place that we give money. And these are places where anti-Semitism can show up. So we have a way that we can learn, right? We can have speakers from our community. We can deepen community connections. Taking the opportunity to encourage that kind of conversation in your community is a good idea. And the last thing, I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, the majority of religious people in this country are Christians. So let's just speak to Christians for a moment, which is to say, like, there is a particular strand of white Christian nationalism present right now in our politics that is growing in strength, and it must be confronted by the Christian community and the white Christian community specifically. I can't say much to that growing group of people right? Like I'm their enemy, but my allies can, and they can do so because it's not the gospel they believe in. They can do so for real rooted interests in their own community and because it will make a meaningful difference in the lives of my community and my family.
Isaac Luria is a program director at Nathan Cummings Foundation, supporting multi-faith and Jewish social justice efforts, and a former colleague of mine at Auburn Seminary. Isaac, thank you for being part of this important and urgent conversation.
Thank you. Love you, Paul. Thanks for
this. Love you too, Isaac.